Hi everyone, I'm Jason Scorse and welcome to another episode of Dispatch from the Zombie Apocalypse. I hope everybody is doing great. Although the events of the last couple weeks would certainly make it difficult to be doing great if you're paying attention to the news as our society descends into madness. Maybe some of you thought that the title for this podcast was a joke, but it really isn't. It really is a zombie apocalypse as more and more people's brains just disintegrate into the disease of lies, authoritarianism, fascism, false equivalency, and the violence that this breeds. But I don't want to talk about any of that today because there's some good stuff happening in America as well as all the insanity, and I want to focus on that today. It's middle of October, and this is harvest season for cannabis, for outdoor cannabis. Big time here in California and around the country, although, of course, cannabis that is grown indoors is harvested continually throughout the year. But for the outdoor crops, it is harvest time, and the legalization of cannabis in the United States is, I think, probably the most unambiguously positive thing happening in the U.S. right now. That's going full steam ahead here. And I want to focus on that and talk about some of the policy and economic and social implications and where I see this going. And also, I think it's instructive, like the gay marriage issue of the last couple decades, how quickly things that seem really hard, once people fight hard enough for them and gets momentum, the society can shift radically, right? I mean, gay marriage was a huge wedge issue that Republicans used to divide the country in 2004. And then 10 years later, it's legal in all 50 states, right? In a decade. I mean, that's just a meteoric, incredibly fast change here, you know, given how politics and history goes. And cannabis is really in that same, dimension, which is it was, you know, and still is in many parts of the country, a focus of incredible militarized law enforcement and incredibly cruel and unjust policies that have just ruined millions of people's lives. And yet now in, you know, a good swath of the country, it's fully legal. And I predict that it will be fully legal within the United States within 5 to 10 years. And that's just an incredible change, and I would say 99.9% to the good. I will talk about the details of that. And so it's something to celebrate and also to give those of us hope who are on the same team, who want a sustainable, just, inclusive America that, you know, once things break for us, when we put in the work, things can change quickly. And I think other good things for the progressive liberal movement will break in the way that gay marriage and cannabis has over the past decade. But I want to focus on cannabis today, and so I'm going to start with a few key elements here. The first is the basic economics of cannabis, which is if cannabis was 100% legal, no restrictions, it was treated like, you know, any other commodity, maybe if we even added, you know, just the basic regulations of putting it in the same category as alcohol, it would be incredibly cheap. It might be $10 a pound. And the current going rate of cannabis is in, you know, at the retail level is thousands of dollars per pound. And so what's the big difference here? Why is the retail versus the kind of the bulk rate so radically different? Obviously, the main reason is because of the illegality. is that all the risk in the system for those who would to grow and distribute marijuana made it a risk premium. And so the point being is that this is an incredibly, incredibly cheap plant, you know, grown in, you know, without restriction, without the threat of law enforcement. It is prolific, and I'll talk about that a little bit more. And so we are starting to see the prices come down quite dramatically, although not anywhere near the levels that it could be if full legalization grows and increases across the United States. When you realize how cheap cannabis is and how easy it is to grow and how prolific it is, you can start understanding why it has been repressed for so long, because it has been actively repressed. The same type of lie and smear campaign that the right wing uses for everything that it opposes. Because remember, the right wing can never win on the facts. They have to lie and cheat and smear and create an alternative reality because they do not have the facts. And cannabis is exhibit A for this. And the reason being is that it threatens a lot of big money. It threatens the alcohol industry. It threatens the opioid industry. More on that later. And it certainly threatens a lot of big pharmaceutical companies because cannabis is cheaper, less toxic, and a better substitute for many common substances that many big corporations make a lot of money on. So they have constantly been putting their hands on the scale in favor of the repression of cannabis because it helped their bottom line. And again, when you see how easy it is to grow and how prolific it is and how much beneficial it is, you realize why they have been tilting the scale for so long. And so before I take a break, I just want to talk about really how superior cannabis is to other drugs. And I want to put this out there because when I talk to a lot of people who don't use cannabis and talk about drugs, they say, oh, well, I don't do any drugs. And when I first question when anyone says that, I say, do you drink alcohol? And I go, oh, yeah, I have a beer or wine or a cocktail every now and then. And so then I say, you do drugs. Alcohol is a drug. And so we've created this false reality because of the stigmatization of cannabis and other drugs, where people who drink alcohol on a social basis or even fairly regularly, for somehow, because that's the default, that's the water we're all swimming in, the air we're all breathing, that's not drugs. It's the other things people do that are drugs. But alcohol is a drug. In fact, it's one of the most destructive drugs in the world. And so when you put cannabis against other drugs, prescription drugs, alcohol, tobacco, cocaine, all the other drugs, it just is stands head and shoulders above all of these other drugs for many, many reasons. First, it's non-toxic. And this is really poorly understood, but you cannot die from a cannabis overdose. You can get sick, you can puke, you can feel really uncomfortable, but you cannot die. The same cannot be said for almost all other drugs. Alcohol, clearly at near the top. If you drink enough alcohol, you will be dead the next day. That doesn't happen with cannabis. It also turns out that cannabis is, in terms of kind of efficiency, it's just one of the cheapest ways to get a buzz, to change your consciousness, to treat a condition. The amount of cannabis that you need to get high or to treat a medical condition on a daily basis is really, in most cases, pennies. And if you grow it yourself, which I'll talk about a little later, maybe even less than pennies. And so non-toxic treats a wide range of symptoms, from anxiety to PTSD to glaucoma to nausea, and just being an overall great recreational drug, it is really a superior plant. Cannabis is one of those really incredible plants that when the more you come to understand about it, the more you go, wow, this is a plant that was really tailor-made for humanity. And also, it doesn't have to be adulterated. That's another thing to think about, right? Almost all other drugs are synthesized or, you know, or combined with other chemicals or alcohol, complicated processes. Cannabis is literally as simple as growing a plant, drying it, and using it. It's about as pure and natural a medicine or intoxicant as you could possibly imagine. And it is an amazingly positive, awesome thing that we are starting to see the legalization. So we'll talk about where we are after a few years of legalization and where the industry and the society is going to go in the future after the break. Okay, so let's talk about the impacts of cannabis legalization now that we're, you know, decade plus out from the medical legalization in many states and now a few years out from the, you know, large legalization for full recreational use in Colorado, Oregon, Washington, and now my home state of California. So what are we seeing? What are the impacts to society? First thing is, no increase in crime rates associated with cannabis. There were fears that people who have, you know, addictions might try to steal and rob to fuel this, that more people who were high might commit more crimes. In fact, we've seen the opposite. We've seen police departments who are now free to use their resources on real crime, like murder, rape, burglary, violent crime, and not on busting people for getting high, that they're actually being more effective at solving crime and because of just a reallocation of their resources. So if anything, on the crime aspect, cannabis has a positive impact of freeing up police resources for serious crimes. What about youths using more cannabis? That was a fear that it'll be a gateway drug and more young people will use it. Well, lo and behold, when you take away the kind of rebellious stigma and you legalize it, it does not lead to a huge surge in youth use. And in fact, we now see that seniors, those who are 65 and older, using cannabis is really on par with younger cohorts. And this is, to me, just incredible that it is really cross-generational here, and that it's young people, middle-aged people, and older people who are using cannabis at really, roughly the same rates. And so that's quite encouraging. We do know that just like with alcohol, it is a small percentage of people who buy most alcohol, both at bars and in liquor stores, and that's where the profit is made. We see the same thing with cannabis. Most people use very little of it. As I mentioned, you need very tiny amounts of cannabis to get high. So a normal kind of use is really pretty minimal in terms of quantity and money. And so most of the big money in the industry is coming from the people who are binge smoking, binge eating, binge vaping, and they account for most of the consumption. And so my point here is, although cannabis is not toxic, and I'm definitely from a public health standpoint not worried about the heavy smokers as much as the heavy drinkers or opioid users, it's still an issue, and resources are and should be devoted to people who have a problem with excess cannabis use, like anything. On to the opioid use, we're actually seeing in places where cannabis has been legalized a decrease in opioid use that is highly correlated and likely linked with a switch to cannabis, because cannabis in some instances can be a good substitute for opioid. And again, just a huge improvement in health and much, much cheaper and just overall benefit. So great news on that. On the economic side, we have hundreds of millions of dollars and perhaps billions across the country now being generated in tax revenue. That's going some to treatment and to law enforcement, but a lot of that's going into schools and environmental initiatives and into, just the general funds in these states. We have tens, if not hundreds of thousands of new jobs and everything from the cultivation, the marketing, the new products, the distribution, and just some really interesting new jobs that are just worth pointing out, right? Instead of bartenders, we have bud tenders, who are the people who help you choose the strains that might be most appropriate for your needs. We have journalists now whose entire full-time jobs are kind of following the cannabis beat. I think the Denver Times in Denver, Colorado is one of the first to hire a full-time journalist to cover the cannabis industry. And I just think, wow, this is just amazing. Like, you can have a job being a cannabis reporter. So I would just say, again, all good. More tax revenue, more jobs, more economic growth, less opioids, more medical uses and a substitution away from pharmaceuticals. And then just people having a good time. Because again, cannabis is much less likely to lead people to, you know, date rape and get into bar fights. It's a much more overall hospitable and peaceful substance. So where do we go from here? What's the industry going to look like in the next 3, 5, 10 years? Here's a few things I'll put on the table. The first thing is that cannabis is called weed because it grows like a weed. It is really easy to grow. And in California here, where you are legally allowed to grow 6 plants, if you were to throw those 6 plants in a backyard, just in the soil, in sun, in a good place, a lot of sun, you could grow 8 or 10 foot plants in 4 months that would yield many pounds. And to put that in perspective, you know, a heavy dose of cannabis on a weekly basis is a couple grams, and a pound is 450 grams approximately. So we're talking, you know, many, many years, and for many people, a lifetime supply of cannabis can be grown in your backyard for a couple $100. Even, you know, a real casual growing of, you know, putting it in some pots and putting it in the sun, and, you know, you don't even have to do that much to it. You can get many ounces per plant. And so I think as it becomes clear to people how easy it is to grow, and it's right now, it's like tomatoes in California. You can literally go into a garden store and buy all the stuff and talk about it, and people share tips. You can buy clones that are the different strains you want, and they're already, you know, a couple inches tall, throw them in the ground. So I think when this becomes much more apparent how easy it is, I think more and more people are going to do this. And I think a large kind of do-it-yourself movement around cannabis will emerge. And just like with your kind of brew your own beer, I think people will start making the concentrates and the specialty products. And what this means is, I think the big business angle here is going to go through a lot of changes. Right now, it's like the Wild West. There's just hundreds of millions, billions in venture capital coming in, people making fortunes. I mean, I'm hearing tales of people with new companies that are offered hundreds of millions of dollars a year or two in because they have a new, you know, some new intellectual property. There's everything from the people doing the lab testing on the potency, on the chemicals, to the specialty products, to the extracts. So it's like the Wild West, and I don't think it's going to stay like that for that long, because I think a lot of these companies are going to go under. I think a lot of people are going to grow it, and I think the price is going to crash, making it so that really there's going to be a lot of consolidation in the industry. And I think maybe 5, 10 years out, you'll have a couple big players with some real specialty products. Then you'll maybe have some of your local players who have your kind of homegrown local flavors. But I hope and predict that there will be a big do-it-yourself community. And I think cannabis will become very, very cheap in the not-too-distant future. So when we get back from the break, I'll talk a little bit about the policy side, the things that I still think need to be done, and then we'll end up with some antidotes. Marijuana, I love it, my brother. Marijuana in my soul. Marijuana in my heart. Okay, so what is left to be done on the policy side? I want to throw out a few things. First, because marijuana is still classified as a Schedule One narcotic, which puts it in, you know, with heroin and psychedelics and cocaine, there is a reluctance on the part of the financial industry to get involved with these businesses. And that is making the cost of capital and the cost of financial and banking services really expensive for a lot of companies. And it's really causing them to waste a lot of money. So I would look to some innovation in the banking sector. I think there's a lot to be done there. Clearly, if it becomes legal at the federal level, then that will take care of itself as alcohol and, you know, other drugs have full use of the financial system, as would cannabis. I think the environmental impacts of the industry are something that needs a little investigation. Some of these big grow operations with hundreds of thousands of square feet of warehouses are very, very energy intensive. They use these very, very intense halogen lights, and it's year round, and the energy kind of carbon footprint here is quite big. So I would look to a move by the industry to green the industry, no pun intended, and bring in the renewable energy and solar power. If you had your cannabis warehouses, you know, fueled by solar power, that would be quite a big step, and I could see the industry moving in that direction. The outdoor growing, there's a lot of tales of places, in particularly Northern California, where it's having a pretty negative environmental impact, a lot of cutting down of native forest land and using water in streams and rivers and really, you know, creating kind of localized droughts. So there's some serious stuff that needs to go on here to make sure the cannabis industry, which has always kind of been a kind of a little rogue industry, plays by the rules and you know, it does not lead to large conservation impacts. I think we also need a lot more research into the uses and benefits of cannabis at the federal level, but also at the state level and by private companies. Because cannabis was illegal for so long, a lot of this research was really hard to do. The government made it really, really difficult to do research. Now that that's loosening, I think we're going to just see all these new benefits coming out and being documented in serious scientific ways, which is going to be great. And that brings me to the issue of the opioid industry, where, as I mentioned earlier, the cannabis is starting to substitute for opioids, and it can be used as a painkiller and is obviously a preferable alternative. And I just want to point out how absolutely craven and evil the opioid industry is, and how this has to be part of the story, right? Think about this, right? That the opioids that have been given out in the hundreds of millions like candy to tens of millions of Americans over this last decade, this is synthetic heroin, right? This is stuff that's sometimes 50 times more potent than heroin. And all of us know the stigma that heroin has, right? I mean, heroin and heroin users, heroin junkies, are really, this is kind of the dregs of society and some of the, we associate with the most degrading and illegal activity in the country. And yet, legal companies were creating pills 50 times more potent and then just giving them out to people for back pain and all sorts of pains, suppressing the data on how addictive these were and how destructive. And remember, these were ending up in medicine cabinets where children had access to them. I mean, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of teenagers have gotten addicted to opioids because they had synthetic heroin in a pill form in their parents' medicine case. And to add insult to injury, these companies that lied and cheated and pushed this, you know, this just plague onto America, which, by the way, is killing more people than the peak of the AIDS epidemic. So let me just repeat that. The peak of the AIDS epidemic killed less Americans than the opioid epidemic right now. These people are now trying to patent medicines that cure opioid addiction. So think about that, right? They've hooked tens of millions of people on their toxic drugs, and now they're trying to make money to cure them, right? So if we lived in a just society, the CEOs and the doctors and the pharma groups that pushed this and suppressed evidence, and the federal regulators who turned a blind eye, these people would all be in jail for life with no possibility of parole. I mean, this is wickedness on a scale that's really hard to fathom. And yet, these are some of the biggest philanthropists. They give money to charities and politicians, and they're in high society, and they're treated as if they're just regular, normal business people going about their daily affairs when they're really criminals by any reasonable justification. And so the fact that cannabis is supplanting this industry and harming this industry and can be a big substitute and be a big opening for the cannabis industry is in pain medication that and competing with the opioid industry, we should just really, really applaud this and hope that this can be complete, because the opioid industry really needs to be dismantled and destroyed. It is really the height of wickedness. So after the break, I will come back with some antidotes. All right, so to wrap up today, I'm going to come with a couple antidotes that are obviously very pro-cannabis. The first is simple. If you are in a state where cannabis is not legal, support legalization, even if you do not use cannabis. It is just about time that this prohibition is ended. It will bring in hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue. It will allow your local law enforcement to focus on real crime, and it is the right thing to do. If you're in a state where the medical marijuana is legal but not full recreational, push for that, support those efforts. And then, of course, as we approach the 2020 election, I'm hoping that the Democrats will have full federal legalization as part of the new 2020 platform. If you are a cannabis user, or even if maybe you're not a cannabis user, I highly recommend, if you are in a state where it is legal to grow it for yourself, to do it. Just because you can. Because this is an incredible plant. It's easy to grow. It's beautiful. And the fact that it was illegal for so long, I think there's just something really patriotic about growing it and saying, you know what, this is about time that we can do this proudly. And in fact, it's so legal in California that if someone is messing with your marijuana plants, you can call the police to go get them to protect your cannabis. And if you're a user, you'll find that you have more cannabis than you know what to do with. It is really incredible how nature really does provide. And your friends will love you as you can give it out for free for party favors for the next couple of years. And again, even if you don't use it, it's really cheap to grow. And then, you know, just give it out. I'm sure pretty much most of us, if we look at our extended family and friends, there's definitely some potheads in there, and they would love to get some of your homegrown organic. So I just super, super encourage everyone to grow it yourself where it is legal and to push for it to be legal where it is not. And then the final thing I want to end on is to really try to go against and combat the stigma against marijuana and cannabis. It's obviously not what it used to be, and that's a beautiful thing. But still, as I mentioned, people who use alcohol think they're not doing drugs, whereas people who smoke marijuana are. We need to end that stigma. And that if we're in a bar or at a concert or at a friend's house and some person is vaping or smoking a joint, some person's drinking a glass of wine, that those are looked at as equivalent. It's just a kind of normal social convention for people who want to catch a little buzz and enjoy themselves, and that, you know, marijuana and cannabis should just be on the same playing field as everything. And we should all work to just remove the stigma. And the best way to do that is just to talk about it in a positive light and to normalize it. And it's already happening, but we can, you know, the sooner we do that across the entire country, the better. So with that, everybody, I hope you have a great rest of the week. If you're enjoying the podcast, please subscribe on Apple, iTunes, or Stitcher. Leave a review, share it with your family, friends, and colleagues. And with that, have a great time and be well. Take care.